Welcome to the Rethink Leadership Podcast with me, Jeremy Blaine, CEO of Performance Works International. This podcast is grounded in business, digital, workforce, and leadership transformation for our times. My aim is to initiate conversations with experts, leaders, professionals who've got a story to tell and who we can all learn from. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel or simply go to performanceworks.global to access all the episodes to date. I'm sure you'll find something of interest. My guest for today's Rethink Leadership podcast is Ian Shimandi from Toronto in Canada. Ian is all about creating purpose as any organization's North Star and has been working with companies for over 20 years. Purpose provides clarity, understanding, is memorable, is repeatable, and buys in employees and customers on that all-important emotional level. Ian talks about blueprinting purpose and tells us more about how refining purpose to just a few words can be the secret to success in strategic, operational, and communication terms. In fact, it's what makes organizations everywhere uniquely remarkable. Let's hear more. Well, a very warm welcome to you, Ian. Please tell us about yourself, your business, and why being clear of purpose is such a massive competitive play for CEOs these days, particularly in modern organizations.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Jeremy. And so I'll first start out by saying, obviously, our accents are different. I'm based in Toronto in Canada. My company is Blueprint, which is, you know, coming up to 20 years old. And that's what we do. We help we help companies become purpose-driven. And we've created this methodology called blueprinting for doing that. So in the early days, we were a service and there was a lot of variability to what we did for you. But in the first 5 years of our business, we slowly started to formalize until we made the transition from being a service to being a product. So now a blueprint is like a widget. We sell the widget, we do a blueprint, and then we're done. But that is the top level plan for how you become purpose driven. It defines your purpose in 7 words or less. And then we figure out how it's going to guide all of your operations and how it's going to guide all your communications, your branding, your marketing, your sales, investor relations, employee relations, board relations, all of that. So that's the methodology, right? Define your purpose in 7 words or less. If that sounds like not a lot of words, it's usually 2 or 3 or 4. And then how's that going to guide your operations? How's that going to guide your communications?
Got it. So why is that so important for organizations and leaders to get right these days?
Well, because, I'm often frustrated when I do reading on purpose and culture, because the definition of purpose is often so long and convoluted. And I look at the definition that they use and I say to myself, man, if I was a CEO reading this, I wouldn't know how to wrap my mind around that. And I'd want to push it away and say, no, I don't want to deal with this now. I've done over 400 blueprints in the last 17 years. And every single expression of purpose is the one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable, right? It's the one thing at their core, at their essence, their secret sauce that makes them uniquely remarkable. So you asked me, why is that important? Well, if your business isn't knowing at your root, at the DNA level, what makes you uniquely remarkable, actually your single most important asset, right? What's more important than understanding the root of your value and then being able to proliferate that? Understanding what it is, being able to articulate it in a simple way so that everybody gets it, and then as a result of that, having it proliferate throughout you know, everything that your organization does. So the thing is, if you buy my definition of purpose, that one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable, imagine that purpose is, imagine I've got a drawing in front of you and there's purpose on top, there's operations here and communications here, and there's two arrows pointing down. Well, if purpose is what makes you uniquely remarkable, imagine those two arrows as hypodermic needles that are injecting what makes you uniquely remarkable into your operations every minute of every day and into your communications every minute of every day. How many companies do you know that currently have that as a designed, nurtured dynamic inside their business that ensures they are always being uniquely remarkable? Most businesses can't even tell you what the one thing is that makes them uniquely remarkable, let alone have an infrastructure for that, having that course through the veins and arteries of your organization every minute of every day. So that's why, that's part of the question of why it's so important. That's the general answer. You should know as a business, Mr. or Mrs. CEO, Mr. or Mrs. board member, you should have the expression that defines what makes you uniquely remarkable on the tip of your tongue all the time, because that should be your total focus. But the second thing is the Great Recession, the pandemic, right? There's a power shift that's happened over the last 2 years. And employees, to quote, I think it was Peter Finch in the movie Network, employees are now saying, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm just not going to. So before, when companies used to say, you know, you're going to work for us and you're going to do it like this and like this and like this, employees are now saying, hell no, I'm going to tell you how I want to work. And if you don't agree with me, I'm going to move. And I actually don't mind quitting working for you before I have some place to go, just because I'm so committed to have meaning and purpose in my life going forward. And unless you're an organization that can grab me, that resonate on a deep emotional level with me, I don't want to work for you. I don't want to work for you. I'm not doing that anymore. Friend once told me, what role does the rat play in, what role do humans play in the rat race? They're the rat. I don't want to be a rat anymore. That's what people are saying. I want to live my life with meaning and purpose. And they're now searching out companies that are doing that. And the companies that are doing it, they've got lineups at the door for people working there. And the companies that don't, they've got lineups for exit interviews as people leave.
Great. Well, you know, there's so much there that resonates with me. And that last point particularly, because I see that too in the organizations I go to. Employee power is there. They're looking for organizations with purpose, leaders who commit to community, to society, as much as engaging them in the organization. And I must say, I just going back actually to your core business. I love the framing, blueprinting purpose. That's just so great. In seven words or less, he said, rapidly checking his own purpose. Yeah, and being uniquely remarkable, and I guess kind of having a passionate belief in that. So once you get that right, the obvious question for me is, once you get that right and you're engaging employees in that journey as well, so you're all going in that direction, how does purpose work inside an organization to elevate performance?
Okay, great question. There's sort of two parts to the answer to that. One part is what I said before about, you know, purpose and it being like a hypodermic needle that injects what makes you uniquely remarkable into everything that you do and say as an organization. That's part of it. But where it's actually being injected into is the culture, right? To me, purpose and culture are inextricably linked. And if you buy my definition of purpose being the one thing that makes you uniquely remarkable, culture is the social expression of that in the company. I define culture. Culture is another thing. culture is worse than purpose. You read definitions of culture and they go on for paragraphs, right? I got a simple one. It's how we cooperate inside a company, how we cooperate. Now, it might seem simple, but think about all the stuff that is loaded into cooperation. Shared understanding, shared rules, shared values, empathy, respect, all that sort of thing. I do a presentation where I show a picture of a massive traffic circle. There are hundreds of cars going into this traffic circle. And, you know, that traffic circle can go one of two ways. It can be how we cooperate. We all understand the rules. We're all respectful of others. We all have empathy for all the other drivers. We know everybody has somewhere to go. So we cooperate to make this thing work as effectively as possible. Or we don't, and we start pulling out the guns. So to me, culture is how we cooperate. And culture is designed on purpose, around it's purpose that creates the design for culture. So that's the theoretical of how it works. Once you have it, you have your purpose in the culture, you know, then it's just going to do its thing. Maybe I can give you an example of that. So we had this, excuse me, I'm sorry. I finally tested negative for the first time in 2 weeks a couple of days ago to COVID. So I still have the raspy cough. So we had this moving company, right? That was a client of ours. And it was a reverse franchise, which means there were 200 moving companies across the country. And they came together and they said, we need to create a head office. Because when I move a family 5,000 miles from one side of Canada to the other, I don't want my truck empty when I'm driving it back home. So there needs to be some coordination so that I've got a full truck both ways. So what they did is they created a head office, a reverse franchise, and these 200 trucking companies are all the owners. But a few of the biggest trucking companies dominated the board, and the board acted like senior management and always got in the way of senior management. And that discouraged senior management, and the discouragement of senior management trickled down to the rest of the employees. And they always found themselves on their back foot. They would come out, you know, they would sit there and they would do their best to think of innovations to proliferate out to all of the owners. And a lot of times the owners said, no, I'm not doing that. That doesn't work for me, because they didn't understand. You know, they weren't in touch with the owner's business enough. And the board was interfering in a way that was beneficial to these few big owners, but not to the rest of the. So we defined their purpose. And the way we define their purpose is we figure out what's the emotional context for the buyer. The purpose has to appeal to more than just the buyer, but we always start out with the buyer. And when you think of yourself in a moving situation, right? What are the two big complaints about moving companies? You broke my stuff, and I was sitting on the front lawn for hours waiting for you to arrive. Now, keep in mind, this was about 15 years ago before GPS became, you know, and cell phones are as common as they are now. But yeah, no, people just didn't like the fact that they had no idea when you were going to show up. And so people didn't feel cared for. They didn't feel like the moving company cared, that it was just, you know, being expedient and it didn't care about their stuff and blah, blah, blah. And this is their family. These are their keepsakes. And so their purpose ended up being a higher standard of care, creating a higher standard of care. Now, it might sound like a bit of a cliche and it might sound a little generic, but the thing is, within the context of that industry, which was not known for care, and within the context of the buyer experience, which is you don't care about me, the commitment to create a higher standard of care was actually a very profound commitment in the moving business, because it means that you committed to being the market leader in innovations that created a caring feeling. Right? Okay. So now it's done. The blueprint is done. Everyone buys into it. One of the operational things that came out of the blueprint was that instead of the board making all of these management decisions, what management did is they made a list of their top 15 priorities, and they gave owners the opportunity to be on any one of those committees. So you got to sign up to be on a committee, and that committee, not management, not the board, but that those committees of owners determined the major policies of the organization before. So it democratized the process of coming up with innovations that would result in a higher standard of care. It got the board to do what a board should do, oversight. It allowed management to introduce innovations that owners actually adopted, because it was the owners coming up with it. They knew what was relevant. And it was all driven by this purpose statement, creating a higher standard of care. I have to admit, Jeremy, I've talked so much in this answer, I've forgotten what the question is.
you've answered it. Is how does purpose work to improve performance?
There you go.
So, you know, kind of that's there. And it's worth reinforcing a couple of those points that you made early on, which really pricked up my ears, and I love the way you articulate it. Purpose injects what makes you uniquely remarkable into what you do and say, you know, and for everyone, internally, externally. And that culture is the social expression of purpose. I've not heard that before, but that resonates very strongly with me from a cultural perspective. Because how can you then drive that level of cooperation, which you talk about the definition of culture being, without that core that everybody can get behind? And as you talked about there, that sort of higher purpose of the higher standards of service that the moving companies all coming together then drove, this sort of democratized innovation that you talk about, really does link, well, a few things: the purpose with the culture, with the engagement, with the motivation to be doing something differently, and then just having the policies and procedures in place that enable it, and performance comes from that, right?
Yeah. The thing about purpose is, you know, obviously my business is purpose, so I believe in purpose. But purpose is a thing. It's when it gets into the culture that it becomes operationalized and starts reaping the rewards.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to make a note of that in a minute. Yes. So you've talked a couple of times about blueprinting purpose, which is been the methodology that you've created over the last 20 years or so. So can we go deeper into that? What is a blueprint and what's the result of that?
Okay, sure. So a blueprint is a really simple thing. You know, remember before when I said that triangle with purpose on the top, what makes you uniquely remarkable, and two arrows going into your operations and your communications? That's the structure of a blueprint, right? So we define your purpose in 7 words or less. And as I said before, it's usually 2 or 3 or 4. The second step then is to create what we call the purpose story. And there are 5 questions in the purpose story. And if I would ask a business any one of those 5 questions prior to a blueprint, it would take them like 20 minutes and they'd be going around in circles in this notional, vague kind of answer. And at the end of it, they would say, did that make any sense? Because it didn't make any sense to them, but they're praying that it made sense to you, right? So we have to get each of those 5 questions down to between 5 and 7 bullet points. It's the old Mark Twain quote, I wrote a long story because I didn't take the time to write a short story. We take the time to write the short story. So there are now 5 answers in the purpose story. And those, it's not a script, but it becomes a guideline for anybody who is involved in communications, branding, marketing, sales, investor relations, employee relations, board relations, all that stuff is guided by the purpose story. All the meat, you know, what do I say? Ah, The purpose story says, okay, now I know what to say. After I do a blueprint, I'm asked to go in and brief the client's agency. They've always got their noses at a joint because they think that they do what I do, but they don't. And then I present the blueprint, and invariably, the agency at the end of it says, oh my God, for the first time in my life, I know what to say about this client, right? Because I'm very clear on who they are and what they're about. So then the third thing that we do is we figure out how it's going to guide all of your operations. So we look at all the material parts of your business and we say, is this part aligned with your purpose? With what makes you uniquely remarkable? And if it is, that's great. We don't touch it. And if it's not, then we've got to come up with a brief directional explanation for how it has to shift. It's usually only one or two bullet points, right? And that's how we get all the parts in the business working in lockstep towards a common goal, because the common goal is the purpose. So those are the three parts of a blueprint: purpose statement, purpose story, business architecture. That becomes your marching orders now for becoming a purpose-driven business. Now, there is a key part in that process that is the cause of all of the magic that a purpose can do. And that key part is that your purpose has to resonate on a deep emotional level. You can't just read a purpose statement and say logically, oh, that makes sense, because you'll never adopt it. It needs to resonate on a deep emotional level, and then you'll own it. So how do we do that? What we do when coming up with the purpose statement is we focus on the relationship between the customer and the company. When we get the purpose statement, it has to resonate with all stakeholders, but we just focus on one, the most important one for simplicity, the customer, right? So I'll give you an example. We had a client who did retail shelving, right? So Home Depot builds a store. They go in and they spend some time putting up all the rack shelving. And when they're done, the store is ready to open. And so when we met with the CEO, had breakfast with him, he said, I know there's a magic to my business, but every time I open my mouth to talk about it, it's so generic, so banal, so like anything anybody else can say. And I said, John, it's because you don't know what business you're really in. And to his credit, he said, you're right, I don't know what business I'm really in. Now, John knew he played in the sandbox of retail shelving, but what area of that sandbox did John own exclusively? So where the conversation got interesting with them is when they started talking about how they had been in business for three generations, right? Not three decades, three generations, almost 100 years. And because of that longevity, they had developed techniques and processes and systems and procedures that allowed them to get finished significantly faster. So you can imagine if they get a Home Depot done a month faster than their competitors, the store opens a month sooner, and that's a month of retail sales that they didn't expect. And so as we're having this conversation about getting finished faster, one of his VPs says, you know, in our signs where it says opening soon, I want ours to say opening sooner. We just went, that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. Excuse me. That became their purpose statement. Now, why? And how does that resonate on a deep emotional level? Well, consider the buyer. The buyer is the VP of construction at Home Depot. And he or she has two things that they care about at the end of the day, two major things: staying on budget and staying on time. They know that to stay on budget, they're accountable to the CEO and the CFO. Staying on time, they're accountable to the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the store manager, all the project management teams, internal and external, that have project management software going into that opening day. If you've got a delay, then you don't just have two people pissed off at you, you have hundreds or even thousands. So it's arguable that staying on time causes the VP of construction more gray hair than even staying on budget does. And when the supplier who is most important to you hitting that opening day on time walks in and says, opening, I'm all about opening sooner, and I'm going to beat your deadline by a month, you can just feel all the anxiety draining out of the VP of construction's body saying, oh my God, you understand my business. You understand my role. You understand my anxiety. Tell me more, right? When he or she hears opening sooner, they get it. Oh, I make my deadline. I start generating revenue faster. I become a hero. They get all of that. They know that. That's the point. We've dug so deep into their psyche that we know how to trigger that story with just two words. And then they start leaning in and they say, tell me more. Tell me how to do it. Tell me how to get there. Right? So now I'll just close this monologue by saying, okay, great. We now know how it resonates on a deep emotional level with a customer. But does that same expression resonate on a deep emotional level with an employee? Because it's got to resonate with all stakeholders. And the answer is yes, but not in the same way that it does for a customer. If you work for this company, you spend all your day working with screwdrivers and drills and screws and bolts and nuts and stuff like that, right? It's not the sexiest business in the world. But when you've got on your hat or on your shirt, opening sooner, you stick your chest out and it's like, yeah, you know, you may be one of our competitors, but you're just a retail shelving company. We're an opening sooner company.
Nice. I like that. And it goes back to exactly what you said in the middle there, in which was purpose must resonate on a deep emotional level. And if there's anything you've demonstrated from that example is that it's there. It resonates internally very strongly. But with the customer who's listening to it, all of those things go through their mind in a split second with a, yeah, tell me more, please. And tell me quick. yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm sure there are lots listening to this episode or watching this episode that want to make progress in this area, because I'm beginning to understand why it's so important to really lock down your purpose into those few words that really resonate on an emotional level, that provide the blueprint for the operations and the communications throughout your organization and with customers. So what could be kind of three or four tips to help those tuning in make progress, Ian?
Let me explain, first of all, why seven words or less, because that's part of the answer. It takes an incredible amount of rigor and time to come up with those seven words or less, because you've got to dig so deep. But the process of shrinking it down to seven words or less, you can't express it in a convoluted or confusing way when you're forced into two or three words or four words, right? It's going to be self-evident. And that's really important. And that's part of the, you know. But the other thing is, once it's down to seven words or less, it's easy to understand. You know, so if you got to explain your purpose in three paragraphs or three pages, it's too long. It's like my eyes are glazing over already. So it's easy to understand. It's easy to remember. You got to live your purpose every minute of every day, you know, when you're working. So you better be able to remember it. And then the third thing is, it's easy to repeat. So you now create in all of your employees and then your customers as well, evangelists for your brand, because they understand, they remember, just do it, right? Just do it. Brilliant purpose statement. 1986, Nike launched that. They were way ahead of the curve. That's when they transformed from being a product company to being a purpose-driven company. So that's one thing is you know, appreciating why the rigor is important to get it down to seven words or less. And then I would say, you know, if you're going to do it yourself, you really do have to delve into the emotional, what is the emotional context for the sale? right? So your customer, actually, you think of them as sitting back and listening to you at, you know, your sales pitch, and then you say, okay, yeah, I'll buy your shoes, as opposed to buying Adidas shoes or whatever. But they're actually very emotionally invested in your business because you solve a vexing problem for them, right? So you need to understand, it's not, this is important to know. And if you've watched Simon Sinek Start With Why TED Talk, you'll know this. And that is, decisions are made in the limbic system, not in the neocortex. The neocortex is where all the rational stuff happens in your brain. It's where the little voice in your head lives. And when you're making a decision and you're weighing the pros and the cons, it's the little voice in the head that's talking. It's playing a game because the decision was already made in the limbic system. And it's just trying to catch up and articulate it. And so the limbic system is where you process feelings and emotions. And it's also where you make decisions based on feelings and emotions. So decisions are not made on a rational basis. They are just, the decision is validated on a rational basis. But by the time you get to rational, the decision's already made. So it really is, it's really important to understand the underlying psychological dynamics of going into this process. Because if not, what you end up with is a tagline or something insipid. And that's never going to work. Unless you achieve the standard of resonating on a deep emotional level, your purpose statement will fail. So it really is shifting attitude away from this logical thinking into this emotions-based thinking.
Yeah, I really like that. And it follows the flow through that you've been talking around the importance of creating this really focused purpose, the clarity, the understanding, how memorable it is and how repeatable it is. But then actually getting deeper into the psychological element really brings out that emotional depth, doesn't it? For you, yeah, going through it, for your people, for your customers, all of those things. And you see that time and time again where buy-in really is when people really get it. And I guess that's the point. And I can also appreciate how hard this is to sit down on my own and do this. And I'm sure those tuning in are the same, Ian. So for those wanting a little bit of advice and to talk to you, the expert, about this a little bit further, how do they get in touch and continue the discussion?
You can go to my website. So my web address is www.number7words.biz. So the number 7, words.biz. So that's my website. That's probably the easiest way to, connect with me.
Go ahead.
If I say one more thing in answer to your last question, which is, you know, what steps can you take? I gave you steps for preparing, right? And the mindset that you need to go through this process. If it takes 2 hours for you to figure out your purpose, I'm going to put my money on the fact that's not your purpose. It takes much longer than that to dig deep and figure it out. But the other thing that you need to know is that purpose and culture, once they're done, once you got it, they are living, breathing beings. They are like plants. They need to be watered and they need to be fertilized. And if you don't do that, like plants, purpose and culture will die in your business. So it's a commitment in the first instance to thinking a different way and being open to different outcomes. And in the second instance, knowing that when it comes to the implementation of it, this is an always on process. You always have to nurture your purpose and culture to keep it alive.
Right. So riffing on a very famous quote, what I got out of there is that purpose and culture can eat strategy for breakfast.
Knew you were going. Yeah. Peter Drucker, purpose and culture. Well, the culture eats strategy for breakfast. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I know. I've just added that onto it because it just felt right now. So that's great. Well, look, Ian, thank you so much for joining me. There's been such a compelling argument to focus on the purpose to then help you drive strategy, help you drive the operational execution, the operations full stop, and obviously how you communicate internally and externally. Really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for joining me.
Jeremy, I'm so happy to do this. It was a lot of fun, and I really appreciate your invitation.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Rethink Leadership Podcast with me, Jeremy Blaine. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel or simply go to performanceworks.global to access all the episodes to date. We'll see you next time.